Did you just start the recording?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. La 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 la.
Apologies to Blue, our
linoleum knife.
Theme song composer.
Hi, everybody. Guess what's happening?
It's a podcast at the cinema.
Starring?
Dave White and Alonzo Duralde.
I'm the hot stepper.
Pure.
You're the lyrical gangster.
Okay, if you say so. This is a podcast at the cinema. That sounds like it's being recorded in a wind tunnel.
Well, I'll explain everything to everybody.
Please do.
Alonzo Duralde took a week and a handful to finish writing his book.
Yes.
Guess what happened?
What, Dave?
He finished.
Yay!
It was finished. The book was finished. And now, in Los Angeles, there's a heat wave.
There is. Like a burning in my heart.
So during the heat wave, that's the second time you've made that joke, by the way.
Really?
On a podcast.
Well, I already did. The temperature's rising and everything.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, well, yeah. We're running out of a heat wave song.
Well, maybe you could not make that any kind of joke. What if you just let it go?
Why do you have to crush me all the time?
What if?
Why do you have to strangle my creativity?
What if? I'm not trying to strangle anything. I'm just trying to, you know, squelch the repeat jokes. You know, we're professionals. And when we repeat ourselves, people go, oh, that again. Them doing, oh, look, they're doing the same thing all over again.
I guess it's time for a new romance.
Not for me, it's not. I like my old one. It fits comfy like a shoe and a boot. Okay, so during the week that you took off,
yes,
to write your book, you set up a makeshift desk situation,
mm-hmm,
in the room that we're recording in right now.
Yes.
Our bedroom. Normally.
Welcome to our
Normally we're boudoir. At the dining room table.
Yes.
Which is also my desk.
Mm-hmm.
Out in the area between the kitchen and the living room, which I guess you call it a dining room, although it's not a separate room from anything else,
not really.
No. So, the noise you hear, the whoosh, that's the air conditioner. Because during this heat wave, as we have learned in years past,
mm-hmm,
if we don't get up and record at like 8 a.m.
Yes.
The laptops get hot, the mm-hmm equipment gets hot, everything yes gets hot, and nothing wants to work right.
Including your hosts.
Correct. So, that's just part of the ambience today.
Yes.
It's part of the pleasure for us.
What's
for the, you, it's something you'll get over.
What's the closed caption for Twin Peaks?
Ominous whooshing.
There we go. Ominous whooshing noises.
Now, what I figure is, because the heat wave is abating somewhat,
mm-hmm,
and we'll be doing some morning recordings, I'm figuring that probably tomorrow,
mm-hmm,
we're going to move everything back out to the...
Really?
Yeah, because I don't like recording at this little card table. There's not enough room. My laptop's not even next to me. I've got my little notes on my paper.
Mm-hmm.
I feel disoriented and upset.
We can't have that. Yes, we'll okay, fine. Then we'll move back out for recording all the shows for our Patreon at patreon.com/linoleum.
And then you won't hear this weird noise anymore.
Right.
Because you paid.
We'll be back
to hear this weird noise anymore.
We'll be back to trucks, garbage trucks and dogs or whatever. You know?
Which is different.
Yes.
And comforting.
Sure. Look, this is... we should be a setting on the Calm app. The air conditioning room.
I'll tell you something. If I'm in here having a little nap,
mm-hmm.
or if I'm falling asleep at night mm-hmm. and the AC is on, it's just like the Calm app.
Yeah.
Because there's it's drowning out all the dumb barking dogs.
It's a steady drone.
And the yelling people out on the street and mm-hmm. stuff. I'm very happy
yeah.
about that. That's all.
All right.
Hey, guess what's for dinner?
What?
Nugs.
Don't nugs require turning the oven on?
Yes. However,
uh-huh.
it will be just as the sun is starting to go down.
Okay.
And the air will cool out overnight.
Maybe I'll just stay in this room and then come out when the nugs are done. And then come back into this
room. You're absolutely welcome to do that. I will sweat like a laborer in the kitchen.
I didn't say I insist on nugs during a heat.
You will enjoy the nugs.
This was your idea.
If you listen to Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is one of the Patreon shows.
Yes.
You'll be fascinated to hear about nugs. It's the new internet food.
Yes.
That's driving me crazy.
That won't leave me alone on Instagram.
They marketed to me over and over and over again. And then I thought, you know what, damn it. I'm always looking for a good nug that's not made of actual chicken.
Mm.
I want to find that perfect vegan nug. I don't know if I've found it.
What's the old Matt Groening line about, like, okay, fine, I'll buy your stupid soda or whatever?
Yeah, well, I mean, but here's the other thing. Like, these cost some money, and you're meant to, you know, not eat the whole box at once.
Hmm.
So that your meal doesn't cost, you know, many dollars per
unit,
per usage,
per nug.
It says on the box mm-hmm. that there are 10 servings in the box.
Uh-huh.
It's a 2-pound box of nugs.
What do they count as a serving size?
We're fixing to find out. But for the sake of frugality, we are going to stick to the serving size.
Okay. Because serving sizes are like, you know, when you go to some schmancy European boutique and the shirt says L.
And it really means XXS.
Exactly.
But we do have films to talk about.
We do.
As well. And we should begin doing that because there are quite a few of them.
Yes.
You saw two of them that I did not see.
Correct.
And will not see.
That's fair.
Ever in my life. So why don't you dispense with them?
Sure.
And give me a break.
Okay. So first there is Train to Busan presents Peninsula. Uniquely New York.
Why does Train to Busan present another movie?
Well, it was also called Train to Busan 2, but there's no train in it, so I think maybe they figured that was a title that didn't really work. This is a...
Well, in Sex and the City 2, there's not much city.
True. True. Nonetheless, well, it's just not New York City. It's another city.
Well, the city in the title is New York.
True.
So, I'm still right.
It's not sex in
there's also not
city.
Much sex, and there's not much comedy, and there's not much of anything good.
You're right, and on all counts.
There is, however, that giant bowl of macaron
that no one touches.
Do not eat.
We're still mad about
it. Still mad about it.
So, did you see Train to Busan?
I still have not seen Train to Busan. But I know everyone loves it, and I got to get around to it eventually.
You would dig Train to Busan.
Listen, I'm very busy watching National Velvet on TCM.
I understand that.
Oh, you're going to hear about that later in this show. What a good movie.
So 2016's Train to Busan, very cool little zombie movie out of Korea, where basically it is the beginning of the outbreak, and people are trying to get out of the cities and, you know, into places where rumor has it that they'll be safe, where they've managed to stave off the the virus or whatever.
Yeah.
And the whole movie is just literally pretty much on the train, like trying to deal with all this stuff to get to where they need to go. And it is suspenseful and intense and scary and a really great movie. I highly recommend it.
I'll get to it.
I do not, however, recommend the sequel, Train to Busan Presents Peninsula.
Tell me about it and tell me why.
Okay, so it's like, you know, the same amount of time has elapsed. It's 4 years later. There's a flashback at the beginning to a guy in the military who is trying to get his sister and his sister's wife and child to safety.
Yes.
They get on a boat that is supposed to be taking them to, first it's supposed to go to Japan, and then it gets rerouted to Hong Kong, I think. And anyway, there winds up being an outbreak on the boat, and the sister and the sister's child turn.
So, into zombies?
Into zombies, yes. All right. So then cut to 4 years later. They're in Hong Kong. The two brothers-in-law have not seen each other for a long time because they, you know, the one who lost his wife and child resents the other guy for not having fixed the situation or whatever. The one sort of timely thing this movie has to offer is that the refugees from Korea who are living in Hong Kong are all being treated like pariahs because everybody thinks that they're spreading disease.
Right.
Because that's where the outbreak started, was in Korea.
Yeah.
Anyway, they're both on the skids. This underworld type basically hires the two of them and a couple of other people to go back into Korea to, like, save this truck with all this money in it that the driver didn't make it. You know, and it's
money truck.
Basically, money truck. And it's supposed to be a quick in and out and da-da-da,
it's no a casino
problem.
In a truck.
Right. But of course, things do not go as planned, and suddenly you have, like, people either dying or getting separated and getting involved with these various factions of people who are still living in Korea, you know, trying to, you know, survive the ongoing zombie plague. And it's nothing special. Like, all it's right. You've seen all of this a million times in a bunch of other movies.
Right.
And it doesn't have that sort of linear intensity that Train to Busan has, where everybody's literally packed into these tight, you know, cars and having to negotiate the space. Here they have all the room they want, and it's just kind of whatever. And it's too long, and it's too many characters, and it's just kind of uninvolving, and just generally a letdown.
Moving on.
Yes.
What's the other one you watched that I'm never going to watch?
The one and only Ivan, which I believe was intended to be a Disney theatrical release, but is now being released on Disney Plus. It is based on a true story that spawned a very popular kids' book. It is about a gorilla who is part of a circus in a mall.
I'm depressed already.
And basically...
a permanent...
Yes.
Display of wild animals in a mall?
Like, it was a permanent... Like, they come out and they do, like, their performy thing, and then they go back and live in these cages, you know, in the mall. In the back somewhere.
Okay, go on.
A baby elephant shows up and becomes part of the circus and is taken care of for a while by an older elephant. When the older elephant passes away, she makes Ivan the gorilla promise her that she'll get he'll get the baby elephant out of there.
So these animals are all digital and they all talk?
Yes, they can talk to each other. Humans can't understand them, but you know, the elephants can talk to dogs and can talk
right,
to
right, right. It's universal animal language.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Ivan then tries various ways to bust out of there and get the baby elephant out, to get all the rest of them out. But it's not until he develops his skill at drawing that he's able to basically communicate that they all want out, and eventually they do.
How do they get out?
Basically, you know, the him drawing becomes part of the circus, and then, like, at one point he unveils this big, like, finger painting thing that he does of, like, you know, the wilderness and the outside, and like it was like, oh, he wants
had
out.
Had he ever seen the wilderness of the outside?
No. Well, okay. He had. I'm sorry. There are childhood flashbacks to when he's captured in the jungle. So, yes, he had at one point been...
Did the real-life gorilla draw pictures of the jungle and say, I want out?
I don't... All I know is that the real-life gorilla was literally stuck inside this mall for like 23 years. And what?
I'm upset.
And did and did some kind of visual art thing, and then was eventually released to a wildlife preserve. There's a this is
where was this mall, and has it been burned to the ground?
I want
to
say Oregon. I'm not sure. You find all this out at the very end of the movie, which by that point you have not bought anything in this movie. And then when they turn around and tell you, I don't know, it's a true story. It's like, well. Too little, too late. Because
where's the documentary?
Exactly. The documentary would be much more interesting. This was written by Mike Weitz, which
listen,
I think this was a
you gotta get. Someone's got to go run you your check.
Yeah.
And when you are a writer, and someone says to you, "Hey, there's an offer for you to write this movie about a talking gorilla." And you say, yeah, I'm not busy for the next 2 weeks. I'll knock it out. What am I getting paid? And they tell you, and you're like, good. I want the money up front.
Yeah, it is tonally all over the place.
Yeah.
Like, it can't decide if it wants to be, like, goofy kitty fart joke stuff or poignant. The guy who runs the circus is played by Bryan Cranston.
Yeah.
And he is either a... humane and compassionate person who loves the animals, or a cruel taskmaster, depending on what the scene needs him to be.
Oh, okay.
It's a hot mess, and it's an all-star hot mess, because the voice is like, the gorilla is Sam Rockwell, and the mama elephant is Angelina Jolie, and you know, Philippa Sue, and Danny DeVito, and Brooklyn Prince, and all these people, you know, are involved doing the voices. But yeah, it is not fun and not good. Shaka Khan is a baseball playing chicken.
Shaka Khan is the voice of a baseball playing chicken?
Yes, she is.
I love her.
Helen Mirren, Ron Funches. But yeah, it's just, it's a big snooze.
You know, they sent that cast of characters over to Shaka Khan, and she said, I would prefer to be the baseball playing chicken.
Thank you very much. Yeah, like, I wouldn't even... and it's not even like, oh, well, it wasn't for me, but kids would enjoy it. I don't even know that I would want to show this to kids. It's not good. And it's all over
kids
the place.
Kids will watch anything.
Well, as
and
I...
And then when they're done watching it, and you say, hey, was that good? They go, yeah. And then, like, you never know what they really feel about it. And then 15 years later... They say, oh, I really loved that movie when I was a kid. And then they watch it again and they're like, what? I was five. And stupid.
I reviewed one of the Smurfs movies and I said, like, yeah, it'll entertain your kids for 90 minutes, but so will a large cardboard box.
Yeah. So, I always go back to Santa and the Three Bears.
Oh, boy.
My mom took me to that.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it.
Because it was color and light and sound.
Yeah, and I was in a movie theater. Felt great. That was cool.
Well, there's much better stuff on Disney Plus, much less in the world in general.
Yeah, so. A lot of National Geographic stuff.
Yes, featuring actual gorillas and elephants.
Yeah. All right. There's a new Barbara Kopple documentary.
Yes.
It's called Desert One. Now, Barbara Kopple was the legendary filmmaker,
yes,
responsible for Harlan County, USA. That's, yes, a documentary from the 1970s,
yep,
that you should really watch. It's astonishing.
She's one of our great documentary filmmakers.
She also made the Dixie Chicks documentary, Shut Up and Sing.
Yes, she did.
Yeah. This is about... We had this little conversation last Friday when we were on KCRW talking, mm-hmm, to Madeline Brand.
Yeah.
And she said... you know, we all know what happened. And I said, and after she said that, I...
Do we all?
I said, well, you and me and Alonzo know what happened because we were alive,
yeah,
when it happened. You know, I don't know how old Madeline is, but, you know, she's probably somewhat younger than we are.
Yeah.
I'd say she's in her 40s.
Yeah.
But you and I are in our 50s.
Yeah.
And we were teenagers
right.
when this went down. When some revolutionary-minded students in Tehran, after the Shah left Iran for the United States, they took over the U.S. Embassy and they kidnapped everybody that was in there.
Yeah.
They held them hostage.
52 Americans.
And their demands were, give us back the Shah.
Right.
So that we can bring him to justice.
Yes.
Now, the United States did not want to do this because the Shah had long been a friend of the United States. And by friend, I mean the United States told him exactly what to do.
Yes.
And...
oil companies had the run of Iran, and if that meant the Shah was allowed to torture his own people, the price of doing this.
He murdered his own people. And so, you know, they were like, nope, give him back to us. And the United States said, nope, we're not giving him back to you. And they said, well, we're not giving you back these 52 embassy employees, who among them were the CIA employees, who could not get intelligence out of the country to the CIA.
Right.
So any rescue mission for these guys and women was going to be incredibly difficult.
Right.
So this documentary is about Jimmy Carter, president at the time, trying to figure out a way to rescue these folks and to do so kind of blindly.
Yeah.
The culture in the United States at the time was one in which people who, you know, were still in support of the politics of someone like Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford, who had been the presidents before Carter, they were not down for Jimmy Carter's "I am a man of peace" whole, you know, vibe. And
this was also the, you know, post-Vietnam era when people were very sensitive about, like, America having lost a war and not being the sort of military superpower that it had always been.
So you've got footage of people in this film, citizens, just Americans, talking about, well, you know, let's just send in 50 cowboys and that'll take care of business. And I'm like, that's not how things work, you know.
Yeah.
Buford.
Exactly. It didn't work in Saigon. It's not working here.
And so... the what was perceived to be, you know, passive inaction was Carter trying to do the hard work of negotiating
diplomacy
a response rather than employ the military. But in the end he said, okay, we have no choice, we have to send in the military. So they set up a mission, they called it Desert One. It was a Delta Force mission.
Actually, was Desert One the mission, or was that the name of the base where the everything went awry? I think Desert One is the place where the plane was on the ground and all the stuff happened.
And all hell broke loose.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, maybe I got my fact wrong on that. Anyway, they get to Iran, the military, and there are weather problems in that there is a big giant dirt storm happening, and it gets in the...
the sand gets in the gears of the helicopter.
Yeah. They have equipment failures. And then there's an accident.
Yeah.
A really horrible, tragic accident that kills 8 of the guys on the mission.
Yeah.
Somehow they got out with their lives in spite of this. And that's what happened. But it was a big secret mission. Like, no one in the United States knew this was even supposed to be happening.
Right.
People didn't find out about it until after it was all done.
Yes.
And so this documentary interviews the guys who were on that mission. They interview the hostages. And I don't mean all of them, but, you know, some of the hostages, some of the guys on that mission, some of the people who took hostage, some of the people who held the Americans captive are interviewed in this movie.
Yeah. And Jimmy Carter.
And Jimmy Carter, who is 95 years old now.
Yeah.
And members of his administration.
Yeah.
And so you get all the facts here. You even get a little bit of the facts regarding the Reagan administration, mm-hmm. who at the time of the hostage crisis, the Reagan administration was, you know, it was a campaign, the Reagan campaign. I shouldn't say their administration because there wasn't a Reagan administration yet. But the Reagan campaign that was running against Carter in the 1980 election apparently had communication with the hostages, and not with the hostages, with the
Iranians.
With the Iranians, and said, hold them until my inauguration.
Yeah, or at least until after Election Day.
Yeah. There's a book about this. It's called Sleepwalking Through History by Haynes Johnson, old journalist, mm-hmm. old school journalist from, you know, the 80s. And he talks about that in this book. That was the first time I remember reading about it, was in the 90s when I read this book and thinking, oh my God. Now, this movie doesn't say one way or the other if the Reagan campaign did that. But there are plenty of sources out there that are saying, oh yeah, they did.
Yeah, Google October Surprise, 1980, and you'll... This movie could have been called The Private History of a Campaign That Failed.
Right.
Because, you know, a lot of times when you have... When you sort of dissect what went wrong in something like this, a lot of times it's very easy to kind of blame, oh, well, you know, we got shortchanged on the... They sent us the bad equipment, or they didn't send in people who had enough training, or... any of that stuff. Here's the thing with that: on paper, you have the Delta Force, who like totally knows what they're doing, and this is like they're the best of the best. You know, they asked the Pentagon for 6 helicopters, and they got 8 helicopters. Like everything that would normally be a hurdle, not a thing. Nope. They got the manpower, they got the tech, they got the equipment, whatever it is. But then, stuff you can't predict, stuff you can't fix. Intelligence you can't get because all of your intelligence people in that country are currently the ones you're trying to rescue. And so for me, I kind of felt my takeaway was sort of like, it's not so much that when these things fail, there's some terrible thing happen. It's that when these things succeed, it's this extraordinary, like, serendipity of all the pieces falling into place when there's so many reasons why those pieces shouldn't fall into place.
Right. This is a very conventionally structured film. If you've seen Harlan County, USA, you know that it's a sort of a verite situation where couples on the ground, her crew is there, and they occasionally become part of the story because people are like, get those cameras out of here.
Yeah.
Because we're going to try to murder some union people. And the...
This is like, you know, Talking Heads.
This is made
footage.
For the history. This was made for the History Channel.
Yeah.
Although it was going to be a theatrical film.
Yeah.
And so it's a very conventional Talking Head archival footage documentary.
But even in that...
it's fascinating. You know... I knew what happened, but I wanted to know more.
Sure.
And there isn't a lot of editorializing. There's not a lot of analysis happening. It all is just the facts.
Yeah.
But as we said to Madeline on Friday, in these times, facts can be controversial.
Indeed.
So I, you know, highly recommend this.
And the one thing they do, I mean, it's not uncommon nowadays, but because obviously there's no extant footage of the actual mission itself, there is animation sort of the, I would say, courtroom portraiture school. I mean, like that. I'm not saying that it's bad.
I was thinking more like Waltz with Bashir, honestly.
Oh, it's not. No, that's a whole... Waltz with Bashir is like very intricate and very...
It is.
This is a lot... I'm going to say sketchy, not in the bad sense of the term, but in terms of more like line drawing illustration.
I get what you mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it works. It's well done.
And if you watch this, be prepared. Some of the people who took hostages, who are interviewed in this film, they say some shocking things. And things that shocked me.
Yeah.
And you know, upsetting.
upsetting stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not a bone dry situation.
Sure, sure. Yeah. There are some intense moments.
And there are some visual there is footage of actual dead people.
Yes.
And so, you know, be aware of that as well.
Too.
Yeah. So, let's talk about another good one. In fact, it is our mutual favorite of the week.
Mm-hmm.
The August Virgin.
Yes.
Now, can you explain the title as the way you explained it to me?
Sure. It is not a prurient title.
No, it's a Spanish film, so the translation is not...
In Spanish, it's La Virgen de Agosto. And that is, it's very kind of a Catholic terminology.
Yeah.
Like, you have the Virgin of, you know, Guadalupe, the Virgin of whatever, and the Virgin of August. Throughout the film, we see various Saint Day celebrations that are carrying out in the city. It's kind of a double entendre because it has a religious significance, but also it is about a woman who lives in Madrid and is staying in the city in August for the first time, which is an unusual thing for Madrid residents to do because it's so hot in August that everybody's like, I can't. The beach, the mountains, something, get me out of here.
Right. But the way you explained it to me was it might more rightfully be called in English Our Lady of August.
Yes,
exactly. Which lends that scenario a more poetic feeling.
But
and
no one asked me.
And that is exactly how the film plays.
Yes.
It is, as we said, it's about a young woman who's about to turn 33, her Jesus year.
Mm.
And she is sort of adrift in between life vocations.
Yeah, she says she used to be an actress, but has no idea what she is.
Doesn't want to do that anymore, doesn't know what to do with herself. And so she takes an apartment with no AC. In Madrid,
in August,
and in order to escape the hot apartment, she just sort of wanders the city for 2-3 weeks.
Yeah,
she runs into friends that she has lost touch with. She runs into exes. She runs into some people whose connection to her is only suggested and not explained. There's this one really wonderful moment where she's standing outside a movie theater and she's going to go to a movie, and up walks two guys.
Right.
And one of them doesn't know her or knows her very minimally, and he goes inside. The other guy gives her this awkward kind of double cheek kiss. That's how they all greet each other there.
Right.
Trust me.
Well, he's the ex.
But she doesn't talk about it though.
Oh, true.
She doesn't say he's the ex.
Right.
But it's you know that the familiar Spanish greeting is the kiss, you know. And they have a weird little tentative chat.
Right.
And then he goes in and he says, "Are you going in?" And she's like, "Oh, yes, I will in a moment." And then she leaves and doesn't go in at all.
Yeah.
And although the film is never, they never explain who they were to each other, what happened, why this moment is awkward, you feel it and know it all.
Yeah.
And that is just a wonderful testament to the performances and the direction of this, the way the script is laid out in such a way as to make it the most dreamy, wandery, lackadaisical Pilgrim's Progress.
Yeah, because she's in this city where she's lived for years. Like, she grew up there. She's lived there her whole life. But she's seeing it in a way that she's never seen it before, and she's experiencing it in a way that she doesn't often do. The lead actress is a woman named Itzazo Arana, and she co-wrote the screenplay with Jonas Treva, who is the director. And it has that sense of... those summery Eric Rohmer movies like The Green Ray or Pauline at the Beach, where, you know, there's this sort of palpable sense of heat, and then also people are outside of their comfort zones, either geographically or emotionally, and so they strike up conversations with strangers, or they do things that they wouldn't normally do and kind of push their own boundaries, and you can sense them, you know, articulating all the way that they don't really know what they're doing, and they want something else, but they don't know what that something else is.
Mm-hmm. I love another moment when she's at an outdoor concert.
Mm.
And it's this, she just wanders in. She's not, it's not a destination. Uh-huh. She's not there to see this band. They happen to be performing a song, and the lyrics move her, and she begins to, her eyes get watery, mm-hmm. and she's going to cry. But then it stops, and she's just, like, she's happy, and she's sad. She's also kind of half-stalking this guy who's
she's working the bar.
She finds out he's a bartender there. Like, and so there's so much happening all the time, but very little is spoken. It's all just felt.
Mm.
And I really love this.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a gorgeous movie. It is available on like the Lemley Theater site. I think maybe Lincoln Center.
Lemley is Los Angeles. So if you live in Los Angeles, Lemley.com.
Okay, but you understand how the internet works. If you're in the United States, you can rent the movie. There's only a couple places where it's renting. That's why I went directly to Lemley. It's like Lemley and I think Lincoln Center in New York. And then it'll be expanding to other venues. But if you want to go ahead and watch it now, wherever you live in the U.S., you can hop on and do that.
Yes, husband. I know how the internet works.
Well, I didn't get why you were...
Well, here's what I was about to say.
Okay.
Just Google it. And you'll find where it's streaming.
Okay.
But everybody doesn't know what Lemley is. There, that's all.
Okay.
I'm right.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Cutthroat City.
Cutthroat City. It's the new film from RZA.
Yes.
And it is not bad. And it is also not streaming.
Ditto for Train to Busan, by the way, which I didn't mention. Both of these movies are not streaming. They are theatrical only, which means if you live in Southern California, you have to go to the drive-in. And if you don't, you could go to a theater. But we very strongly suggest that you do not
go to a theater. Here's the thing. Before we talk about this movie, we've been discussing this for the past 2 days.
Yeah.
Like, what do we say as the streaming trend of the past 6 months begins to crackle and break down a little bit because some distributors, some filmmakers, some studios have decided, nope, theaters. Even if it's only 100 theaters nationwide, even if it's a drive-in here, a multiplex over there, only theaters. Now, if you live in Southern California and you want to see the new film from RZA, Cutthroat City, you will go to a drive-in to see it. It's playing in Los Angeles at the Vineland Drive-In. Actually, that's not Los Angeles. It's the City of Industry. The glorious City of Industry.
In the Southland, Dave.
Yes. So anyway, but let's say you live somewhere else and it's playing at your local multiplex. Don't go. If you're interested in seeing this movie, wait. In about 8 weeks, it's going to be on Blu-ray and streaming.
Yeah.
By the time
4 weeks, maybe.
October rolls around, this film will be available.
Yeah.
Guarantee you. Sorry, distributor. Sorry, RZA. Your movie ain't bad, but nobody should be in a movie theater right now.
No.
It's not safe.
It's a terrible idea.
And it's not about your comfort zone. It's about safety.
Yes.
So if you can go to a drive-in and figure out a way to go to the bathroom in a way that doesn't, you know,
put you at risk,
endanger your health, bring your own snacks, you know, just bring one of those hospital pee jugs with the lids. That's all you got to do. Bring your little pee jug.
Because everybody's got one of those lying around the house.
You know what? I had hernia surgery about 10 years ago and we got one.
Yes.
You know what? It was really helpful.
Yeah. And you never had to empty it.
Well, you know what you do when you're done with it? You clean it. So it's not like you've got a jug full of pee sitting around your house, is it? No. Anyway. Don't go to a movie theater.
Do not, please.
But you might want to see Cutthroat City.
At some point.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what it's about. It's set in New Orleans right after Katrina.
Mm-hmm.
And the folks in the Ninth Ward have been, you know, left behind in terms of, you know,
FEMA money.
FEMA money, help from the government, you know.
Relocation.
George W. Bush made a colossal disaster out of that situation.
Yeah.
When he and his administration could have helped, they didn't.
Correct.
And so these three, four friends,
four friends.
Who are the actors? Shameik Moore,
Denzel Whitaker.
Yes.
Kian Johnson, and Demetrius Shipp Jr.
Okay, yes. So these four friends, they are sort of back against the wall. They're broke. They need help. They decide to rob a casino. Now, they do this in a way that I found like almost magically unbelievable, but we'll get to that in a second. They do this because of T.I.,
right,
who is a local sort of crime lord.
Yes.
And just by the way, T.I. is giving, as you referred to it, a Baroque performance. He is so, like, idiosyncratic and weird and you know, using, like, nonstop flowery language from beginning to end. And I loved him in this film.
At one point, he has an eccentric off with Terrence Howard.
Yes, yeah. And you know, if you're going off, you're going up against Terrence Howard in the weirdo department, you could lose really easily. Yeah. So...
come correct.
This is, in keeping with what RZA has done so far, straight up genre film.
Yeah.
You know, when you come from Wu-Tang, that is your world. And it's Fony made and with Man with the Iron Fists, which was a bad, very bad
not
movie.
Not good.
Very bad movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are going to maybe want to do a crime film after that. And that's what he's done. His filmmaking skills, his formal technique, has improved. As you said the other day, I'm looking forward to his sixth film.
Yes. Because every one is a little bit better than the last one. I did not see Love Beats Rhymes, but...
no one saw Love Beats Rhymes. It's got Azalea Banks in it,
and John David Washington.
Yeah. Yeah.
Star of another movie you shouldn't go see in theaters, Tenet.
It came and went without a blip.
Huh.
And so, but there was a big falling out between Azalea Banks and RZA during the process. Anyway.
Oh, gotcha.
But, you know, Azalea Banks has fallings out with people with some frequency. So here's the thing about this movie. It's totally watchable, really entertaining. Almost, as I said earlier, almost fantastically unrealistic, because the way they do these robberies and the way they get away with it makes me think, how exactly?
Yeah, we've made the joke how, like, you know, they banned Rafifi in France because they thought people was going to teach people how to, like, commit a burglary. No one's learning how to
learn how to do a crime watching this movie. And maybe that was the point. Maybe the fact that they're not criminals. They're just dudes who are just making it up as they go along.
Like, this is how these people would do this crime because they have no idea what they're doing.
Yeah, like, these four friends, this is what they would do because they don't know what they're doing.
Right. Maybe.
But that isn't explained. It's just sort of given to you as, look, and then they got away with it. And you're like, okay.
This is definitely a movie with ambitions. Like, he wants to sort of illustrate the sort of echelons and hierarchy of corruption happening in New Orleans. So you get, like, Ethan Hawke as a former corrupt cop who is now a corrupt city councilman, and you have Terrence Howard, and you have, there's a lot of, you know, like, Ethan Hawke gets kind of stuck with being Joe exposition in this movie.
Quite a bit, yeah.
But there's a lot of... There's an attempt to sort of illustrate it's not just, like, things are bad in the Ninth Ward. It's that things are bad in the Ninth Ward because this person and this person and this person and these people are making money off of it and are, you know, have other, you know, agendas at play that is making things so terrible in the Ninth Ward. And I admire the ambition of that storytelling, but it's beyond the grasp of the writing and the directing here to really kind of capture that, I think.
They even give you a hint of the enemy is capitalism.
Mm.
But then it's not fully explored.
True.
The way you want it to be.
Yeah.
But you know what? It kept me going because I wanted them to get away with everything.
You were rooting for them.
And there is a twist in the end.
Yeah.
That is also weird, but I admired it.
I didn't love it,
even
but
though it didn't quite fully... It's like a landing that didn't stick, but I admired the effort. And yes. So, I, you know, you won't know what's coming. And even when you see what's coming, you might not want to trust what you just saw.
True.
So, wait for this.
Yes.
When it comes out to DVD, streaming, Blu-ray.
It's more than 2 hours long. You want to watch it at home.
It's about 2 hours solid.
It's
like IMDb 2 hours and 5 minutes-ish.
IMDb says 2:12.
Well, they're wrong.
Okay, fine.
Yeah. The, speaking of Ethan Hawke.
Yes, so much Ethan Hawke this week.
Tesla, the new film from Michael Almereyda.
Mm-hmm.
It begins with roller skating.
Clams on the half shell.
Yeah.
And roller skates. Roller skates.
Begins with roller skating. Nikola Tesla, the famous,
Inventor
and man who helped develop the system for alternating current.
Yes.
He's roller skating with a woman that he is involved with, but not involved with.
Right.
Anne Morgan. Thank you. Anne Morgan, the daughter of J.P. Morgan, the millionaire of the turn of the 20th century. Yeah.
Of the Gilded Age.
And she looks right at the camera, and she talks about a cat, and how stroking a cat makes electricity, and how Nikola Tesla thought, is the entire universe a cat?
And who strokes it?
Yes. If this doesn't tip you off that you're in for an unusual experience, 5 minutes later, Morgan, what's her first name again?
Anne
Morgan. Played by Eve Hewson.
Yes. Who knows a thing or two about being a daughter.
Yeah. She's the daughter of a very famous man.
Yes.
Named Paul Hewson. Known to you as the insufferable Bono. But we don't blame her for this.
No.
She's really cool in this
yes.
movie.
Yes. I've been a fan ever since the Nick.
And she opens up a laptop and begins talking about what happens when you Google Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
And that is the moment in the film where you think, okay.
So all bets are off then.
All kinds of things are going to happen here. It's a biopic that is not a biopic.
Yeah.
The elements of it that are a biopic in the way that you expect one to be
mm-hmm.
is Ethan Hawke, who's giving a really cool performance.
Yeah.
You said he looked aghast most of the film, and I also thought it was sort of like another good word to describe his face through the film is stricken. Like, he seems always sort of like befuddled, lost in thought, upset about something, but he's great in the film. And then all these dudes, you know, around him messing with him.
Yeah.
Because that's really
one of the Tesla story.
The Tesla legacy is everyone tried to F with him,
yeah.
and most of the time they succeeded.
Yeah.
Westinghouse did it, played by Jim Gaffigan.
Of all people, yeah.
Edison. Edison, played by Kyle MacLachlan, by way of Agent Dale Cooper. Like, there's this ice cream eating scene
right.
that happens that's very weird.
Although he also, since Edison was hard of hearing, I was getting a little bit of, you know, Agent Cooper's boss.
Yeah,
you know?
Lynch. The... there is also a third act surprise that is not a twist, but it's just another
way of telling the story.
It's another way of telling the story that makes you stop and think, wait, why is this happening right now? And you'll know it when it happens.
Oh, for sure.
But what I love about this film the most, not just the fact that Almereyda is such a visually inventive filmmaker, there's matte paintings and illustrations that people are acting in front of, there's miniatures that do a lot of the work in the machinery aspects of all of it. There's just so much, you know, cool, formal stuff taking place here. That one of the things you almost don't notice is that the female characters are not behaving like they do in a typical biopic, because these biopics are all about difficult,
great men
of the past, and what the women did then was...
Real man of genius!
For example, yeah. What the women did in that moment was, quite often, at least in the films that are made about it, are, oh no, Nikola Tesla, don't go out at night so often with electricity.
Somebody describes it as the, oh honey, don't go out and don't break the sound barrier tonight.
Right. But in this film, the women, I think, represent the future.
Mm.
Within 5 minutes, like I said, you've got Eve Hewson's character popping open a laptop and explaining the movie to you. She looks right at the camera and narrates the film in various spots. Shows you, you know, archival stuff.
She relates historical anecdotes, and then which are then acted out, and then she says, but that never actually happened.
Yeah, like, she's in control of 100 years from now.
Yeah, the legacy.
Then you've got a smaller role. Sarah Bernhardt, the actress, shows up, and she is equally this representative of the future. Not only was she, you know, sort of a harbinger of who and what would become the deciding cultural forces of the future.
She was one of the first, like, celebrities.
She was a celebrity. And that was unusual at the time. So, in a way, she was an inventor, too. And when she shows up, she's soundtracked to disco music. So there is a lot of stuff at play here, and all of it is really exciting to watch, contrasted to a film like The Current War from 2019, which was about the same subject matter.
Right.
And was...
dull as dirt.
Oh. A painfully boring experience watching The Current War. This is the opposite of that.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, it goes back to the thing that April always likes to say on Switchblade Sisters about spoilers. You know, it's not what happens in a movie, it's how it happens.
Right.
And you can tell, you know, look, the one and only Ivan is a true story, but it's not believable for a second.
Right.
You know? So, yeah, it's all in how you portray the material and what you do with the basic notion of it, you know.
I have a DVD/streaming pick.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
What's that?
National Velvet.
Go! Oh my goodness. You and the horse movies.
I was, you know, scrolling through the schedule of TCM about a week ago, and National Velvet was coming on, and I thought, you know what? I've never seen this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I've never seen a movie starring Elizabeth Taylor as a child. Like, I know she got her start when she was about 9 or 10 years old.
Right.
And this National Velvet was like her third film, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
But it's the one that made her a star.
Right.
She wasn't even top billed. Mickey Rooney was the top billed star, because he plays this jockey.
Mm.
Who's, you know, down on his luck and has a connection to Elizabeth Taylor's family that he doesn't know yet. And, you know, I love a horse movie.
Mm.
But I didn't know that this would really be as exciting to me as it turned out to be.
Huh.
But take away the fact that I love horse movies.
Mm-hmm.
This is a beautiful film.
Oh, wow, okay.
It is a beautiful film. Not only is it beautiful to look at with that gorgeous early 40s Technicolor that looks like everything's been painted by hand.
Yes.
There's just this glow, this Thomas Kincaid sort of glow to everything. But it's a compelling story about people more than the horse. The horse does what it's supposed to do. But the horse isn't something that, like, you feel this great connection to in the movie. Uh-huh. It's the people.
Huh.
It's a family story. You've got Elizabeth Taylor. She's 11.
Wow.
Angela Lansbury, who's all of 14 or 15 in this movie. Hmm. Playing sort of the boy crazy sister. The parents,
it's Donald Crisp, right?
Donald Crisp,
yeah.
Who was an interesting dude in his own right.
Yeah, if you've ever seen How Green Was My Valley.
Yeah. He was, I learned, he was also in The Birth of a Nation.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, that's right, he was? Yes.
But most importantly, you will be knocked out by Anne Revere, who plays Elizabeth Taylor's mother.
Mm-hmm.
She won the Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for this film.
Wow.
I didn't know this until today, 5 days after watching the movie. Mm. Her performance in this film is so moving and so good and wise and gentle and just like the mother everyone wishes they had. She knows exactly what the kid needs. She knows exactly what the family needs. Like, an almost supernaturally motherly presence in this film. Gotcha. And there's a scene near the end, after the big race, where Elizabeth Taylor is talking to the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, I cried. It's so beautiful.
Okay. I gotta see this.
Have y'all ever seen National Velvet? Well, get yourself to seeing National Velvet, because it's amazing.
My streaming pick is about as far from National Velvet as one could get. I just found out that it is streaming on Amazon Prime.
What?
It is Brian De Palma's Femme Fatale.
Ooh.
A movie that...
I love that movie.
A movie that came and went, and I don't know why, because it's all the things you want in a Brian De Palma movie.
That is a great Brian De Palma movie.
It keeps you guessing.
Yep.
It's sexy. It's unpredictable.
It's more than sexy. It's horny.
It is horny. And it's Rebecca Romijn and Antonio Banderas, who are like, who else do you want to be
with? Those two people are also very horny.
Yeah. It is just wonderfully twisty, and I saw it by accident, because the thing about De Palma, especially like later era De Palma, you know, there was another filmmaker we were just talking about where it's kind of like, burn me five times, shame on me.
You know? Exactly.
I went with some friends of ours to opening night of 8 Mile.
Yeah.
At the Arclight.
Yeah.
And it was sold out. Like, it was in 6 screens or something, and it was sold out.
I was with you.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're like, all right, well, I guess we'll go see Femme Fatale, man.
Right. Yeah.
And it's so good.
Yeah.
And it's like, and nobody went and saw it, which drives me crazy, because like he then immediately went back to making more movies I didn't like.
Yeah.
Like that one with Rachel McAdams and...
Oh, that was fun, too.
Oh, that was dumb.
It was terrible, but it was fun.
Yeah, but this one's actually good. So anyway, it's streaming on Amazon Prime. It is quite likely you missed it, because almost everyone did during its brief theatrical run.
Remember that time we were at that Christmas party and Rebecca Romijn and Jerry O'Connell were at the friend's house?
Yes.
And I was like, and we were like, shook their hands. We're like, oh, hello, nice to meet you.
Hi.
And my first thought was, you were in Femme Fatale.
I know.
I didn't say anything. I just was like, oh, good to meet you.
Yeah.
Goodbye. We will not speak again during this party.
We played it cool in that LA way. It's what we were thinking the whole time. And of course, now it'd be like, y'all were on Haircut Night in America.
No, I would not discuss that with them. That is not what I would discuss with them.
That's going to be a fascinating little, like, when we look back at this period.
We will be the only people who remember it, because we may be the only people who watched it.
Oh, I bet you not.
I need to know from the Linoleum Knife listenership, how many of y'all watched Haircut Night in America? We only watched it because it sounded so stupid.
And it was.
And it was. But it was boring and stupid.
Yeah.
And so...
A bit of a letdown.
I would like to know who watched it.
Get your laptop and read us some letters.
Pause me a minute so that I can do that.
Sure.
All right. Well, some of these are letters and some of these are 5-star reviews.
Yes, they are. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and we will read it on the show.
DJ R. Campbell. I don't have my glasses here, so, you know, we're going to... Oh, actually, you could get my pair over the side of the bed. My broken pair. I have a broken pair of glasses that I keep on the bedside table. Like, there's one, ear thing.
Branch.
There's one branch that's completely not on the glasses. And I wear it. I wear them at night if I'm lying in bed before I go to sleep and I'm looking at Twitter or whatever.
Because you can lie on the pillow.
I can lie on the pillow and the thing doesn't get in my head.
Yeah.
It's a great pair. Everyone should have a broken pair of glasses by the bed.
You would think, being Dave White, that there would be like a bullet hole in one of the lenses, like at the end of Bonnie and Clyde or something, but no.
DJ R. Campbell says, David Alonso are my favorite. Oh, he spells favorite with an O-U, so where are you from?
Ooh.
DJ R. Campbell, what country are you from?
He likes our flavor.
Yeah, my favorite movie critics. I love their banter. I'm so excited when each new episode goes live. Thank you, DJ R. Campbell.
Thank you.
Jesse says, I know it was very important for the two of you to review The Secret Dare to Dream, but I was crossing my fingers that you would be one of 4 media outfits. You are an LLC, after all. No, we're not. We're an S Corp.
Yeah.
That would cover the Ben Hickernell film, What We Found?
Don't know.
I don't even know what this is.
Me neither.
Which I rented last week because it was $4.99 and not $20.
Sold.
I cannot form coherent thoughts about it and would have appreciated any and all words related to it. Good luck on finishing your book this week, Alonso, and I hope that you listen to the Secret Garden musical while you write. It's one of my all-time favorites, and it features some peak Mandy Patinkin vocals.
I'll have to check that out. I am reading the book, finally, because someone sent it to me, and I don't know who.
Yeah, an anonymous person sent the book, The Secret Garden, to this home.
Yes.
We have no idea who it was.
So I'm enjoying it. Thank you, whoever you are.
JD says, the beginning of the new Secret Garden really put me off the rest of the film. We open with a title card about how traumatic the India-Pakistan separation was for the people of those two nations, and it was. But the film isn't about them. It's about a little white girl who also happened to be there. That isn't her story, and the film isn't interested in that story, and I basically spent the rest of the film trying to figure out why they made that choice. I still don't know. I'd have liked the film much better if they had never shown me that card.
Agree. Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, I think they wanted it to be set after World War II because the book was written in 1910, and
they didn't want to ignore it.
Exactly.
You know,
it would be the
here's what's happening in India, but that's not what the film is about.
Yeah,
it's about this little white girl and how she learns to love again.
I think they could have maybe kept the cholera epidemic from the book. I don't know, but yeah, you're right. It's an odd choice.
Kathy says, I think Katie Holmes might be blacklisted from good movies because of leaving that other thing. Slash person.
Maybe? Who can say?
Wasn't she recently in something good, though?
Was she?
Am I wrong? I'd have to pull up her IMDb.
Nothing
to
leaps
remember.
To mind.
Yeah. Holly says, lots of UK cinemas are already open. Not sure how long that'll last. But they're in a better state than us in the United States now in terms of infection rates and case rates.
This is true.
Yep.
We'll see if opening the movie.
We hope things are good over there.
Oh, no. She was in Brahms the Boy 2. A not good thing. Oh, she did have a cameo as herself in Ocean's 8.
That's right.
And she's in Logan Lucky. So, okay. So she gets some stuff.
Hey, look. It's 2 more 5-star reviews.
Hooray.
This one's from Dugan. High recommendation. 2 handsome gentlemen.
Oh.
Who just happen to be married. They give to the common people. Their wonderful opinions on cinema and actors and directors and sometimes banana bread. Sometimes their stories are so intimate that it feels like you're listening in on them. This is why I... And then there's an ellipsis and I can't read anymore.
Oh, here, let me...
How do I make the ellipsis? Tell me more. What happens? Click on the right thing for me, please.
Here we go.
Are you doing it?
Yes.
Did it happen? This is why I love them like a Studio Ghibli water droplet. The next one is from Blue Gray Closet. My name is Fluffy McFluffy Pants. And my husband is named Snotty McSnotty Pants. Every day I try and fail to find meaning in my endless fruit-based desserts. Yet I nonetheless enjoy this Sisyphean effort because they taste good. Most of our favorite films, most people will never see. And yet we can't do it again. Click on the title?
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing.
Let me.
I got it. Okay. I got it. Most of our favorite films, most people will never see. And yet we gab on and on about them. Yelling into a void, which is perfectly content to only muse about Snyder and Nolan. Is it worth it? Probably not. Does at least one reviewer enjoy it? You bet. Their name is B. Peterson, and they listen every week. So, Blue Gray Closet, you are B. Peterson.
Yes.
Now we know who you are. Wait, am I Fluffy McFluffy Pants? And you Snotty McSnotty Pants?
I mean, B knows for sure.
I think that I am Fluffy McFluffy Pants. Because I am the narrator of this, then I am the person who is making
the fruit desserts.
Fruit-based desserts.
Right. It all comes together.
So I am Fluffy McFluffy Pants.
Okay.
You are Snotty McSnotty Pants.
All right.
Until the subject of art house cinema comes along.
Right. And
then I am Snotty McSnotty Pants.
Thanks, B.
Thank you indeed. Because
it is a 5-star review.
It's a 5-star
review. And we read it.
And we'll read any 5-star review. And I feel very fluffy sometimes.
And I will
in
cop
my
to,
pants.
I'll cop to Snotty. I don't care. You're not the boss of me. Thank you all for listening.
We're
again,
done.
We have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/ Linoleum Knife, one word. We have lots of extra shows.
Yep. We're going to be recording them this week.
We will be. You'll enjoy them. So yeah. please check that out. Check out our friends on the internet. Check out the other podcasts that I co-host. That would be Breakfast All Day.
And a bunch of them.
Who Shot Ya? And A Film and a Movie. This week's A Film and a Movie, I'm really dying for people to hear. It's going to be a lot of fun. It drops on Wednesday. Joel Monique is our guest, and we talk about Fellini's Amarcord and Spike Lee's Crooklyn. It's a really great conversation. Anyway, so check those out. Go listen to our friends on the internet. Check out all the things that Bibbs and Whitney are up to at the critically acclaimed podcast network. Check out The Schmoes Know, Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley, The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys at the Movies, The Big Fat Gay Podcast, Criterion Cast, and Secretly Timid. You can subscribe to this show for free at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review while you're there. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, including Google Play and Spotify and CastBox and Podbean and whatnot. You can follow us at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for your patience in letting me finish this book, but now we're back and
we're better than ever.
The train is rolling. So yeah. Anyway, all right, until next time.
Air conditioning, air conditioning, air conditioning, air conditioning. Goodbye.